Live from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
I'm freezing up. The on-air is like, hey, mom, what do we do?
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks for tuning in again tonight. We love it that you're listening to us. If you're a songwriter, a musician, or performer anywhere in the country who is trying to find your path to success here in Music City, this show is for you.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't have any answers. Nah. We're out there slinging songs during the day, just like you guys are. But we are able to find brilliant people, pick their brains, and answer your questions.
That is true. And you can do that by going to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. You can also find us on Twitter @TheMusicRowShow.
And really?
Even Instagram, although we don't really look at that during the show.
What do you mean? I'm on it all the time.
Oh, yeah. But
I can't get enough of the Instagrams.
Selfie addict.
Right. That's all I, yeah.
That's all he does.
That's all I do.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a killer show for you tonight.
Yeah, we do.
Once again, this is our last night this year, Bending Time and Space is our first hour. We're here in Nashville at the WSM Studios in the Grand Ole Opry, Opryland Hotel, visiting with hit songwriter, record label exec, just all around cool person, Sandy Knox. And she's here to visit with us about her music career and this fun event that she's part of this week for a great cause.
Oh, yeah. And then check this out. We're going to go back to Belfast and talk music with hit songwriter and recording artist, activist, artist, author, Bruce Coburn in hour two.
Right.
We're going to have to get there pretty quick.
That's all right. I think we can do it. Get to it. Hino, please do the honors and introduce these
absolutely
lovely, lovely people.
Well, joining us again, making her return to the Music Row Show.
Triumphant return,
triumphant
Hino,
return, that's right, is hit songwriter and founder of Wrinkled Records, Sandy Knox. As many of you may know from the last time she was on, Sandy's had a long and successful career as a songwriter with songs like Why Haven't I Heard From You and She Thinks His Name Was John for Reba. Cuts for Donna Summer and Neil Diamond, Dionne Warwick, and of course, her Grammy Award-winning song, Does He Love You, which was a duet with Reba and our good pal, Linda Davis.
Yep.
But Sandy is also part of a great event this week called The First and the Worst, which is which is an awesome charity event that will feature big hit songwriters performing their first and worst songs. So that sounds like a lot of fun. So we're happy to be able to say once again, Sandy Knox, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Hi,
guys. Yay.
And Sandy, you brought a friend along with you. Who's joining us here?
This is Tatum.
Hello.
Come on up to those mics.
Get up to the mic. There we go. Now we want to hear you.
I like it when y'all tell me to get closer.
Get closer, Sandy. Get closer. Tatum, you're one of the founders of the Music Health. You are the founder of the Music Health Alliance.
I am. Now we are a team.
Yes.
Initially, it was just me, and we've built a great little resource to bring healthcare to the music industry for all these folks who are self-employed and part of small businesses or part of labels and PROs who don't quite know what to do with the insurance they have.
Right.
That's true. So this event, First and Worst, is actually a charity for you guys or
it
a
is.
Benefit for you guys.
Right.
So,
let's just start by talking about this event. What is the First and the Worst? And we're going to talk about who's it benefiting and how did you get involved with it?
Well, the First and the Worst is an idea I've had for many, many years. When I was teaching songwriting at the University of Texas, the students that I would teach loved to hear my early songs, the songs that I wrote long time ago when I was first starting out. One of the first songs I ever wrote when I was first starting to write when I was 11 was a song called Oh, Since We Broke Up, Chuck. I called it Up Chuck. My parents thought that was very clever. They got me a guitar and I started writing other little songs. So they loved hearing my bad songs and then seeing, you know, what it morphed into. Nobody starts out writing great songs.
Right, right.
And then eventually, you know, if you work at it long enough and hard enough, you write a few hits.
We've heard.
Yeah, so you, yeah. So my idea was to do a night and have it devoted to a charity event so it could raise some money, do some good, of hit songwriters performing their very, very early bad songs.
Nice.
So we partnered with MHA and we've got a handshake deal that we're going to do it every year. So it will always be the First and the Worst on the first.
On April 1st.
April Fool's. Yeah. How perfect, right?
Nice.
Yeah.
So how hard was it to talk big hit writers into publicly performing their worst song?
Well, you know, actually, we have a great lineup that night. And the most important thing is that these writers have to, you have to be able to laugh at yourself.
Sure.
You have to be able to, first off, remember some of your songs. I was lucky that when I first started writing my song, my parents would let me go demo my songs. So I had all my stuff on reel-to-reels, which I digitized, and then I revisited, and that was frightening. But a lot of these writers, they were very happy to do it, and they loved the different twist on, you know, not just another writers in the round night.
Sure,
right.
So they'll start the evening singing a couple of their bad early songs, and then they'll end the evening singing their hits.
Okay.
Yeah. So beautiful.
So they get to redeem themselves by the end of the night.
Okay. And we have a great lineup. You want to know who's going to be on the show?
Hey, Sandy, who's playing?
Let me put on my reading glasses.
Okay.
Roxy Dean, Rivers Rutherford, Richard Lee, Liz Rose, Wynn Varble, and Phil Barton.
Nice.
So that's our lineup. That's a pretty good
lineup.
That's
a great lineup.
We've already got I won't name names, but we've already got some heavyweights committed to next year.
You're going to go next
this year?
Huh? Scott's going to be there.
Well,
nice.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what you meant by heavyweights.
Oh.
Thank you very much. So what? Where's it at? I mean,
it's going to be at 3rd and Lindsley on April Fool's. The doors open at 5 because we have a silent auction
with lots of cool stuff.
Lots
like
of great
what?
Stuff.
Like what, Tatum?
Like, we have a one that the young girls are interested in. We have a Taylor Swift fun pack that's filled with everything, all things Taylor Swifty or whatever her
Taylor
new
Swiftie.
Cool name is these days, which my kids are interested in. We've got signed guitars. I can't even remember. We've got like 10 signed guitars.
Yeah, really?
We've got an experience pack from Little Big Town, so any show you want to go to around the nation, and we have Southwest ticket vouchers. I mean,
spa packages,
CMA tickets, symphony
dog
tickets.
Training. We've got artworks, some fabulous artwork.
Any babysitting packages?
We could find that.
Okay, I might be.
You
for
tell
that
us
one.
What you want us to auction off. We can find it.
Now, do you take donations in spare change? Because if you do, we can autograph a picture.
Yeah,
and you might actually get 15 cents for something like that.
Let me
that.
Tell you, absolutely. As a nonprofit, we will take the shirt off your back and figure out how.
Luckily,
to make
I'm wearing
out.
Two.
Da, na,
so
na, 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 da.
I see people lining up at the windows. Here
yeah,
in the
right. With guns,
pitchforks.
If he takes it off, pull the trigger, boys. Okay, well, that's exciting. Now, how did you get involved with these guys? You said you were looking to do it for a charity. What was it that made this one so special for you?
Well, actually, I'd known Tatum for quite a while, but actually, Katie Gillen was having lunch with you guys, wasn't she?
She was, and we were talking about the music industry here in Nashville. As generations get older, there are not a lot of resources for the seniors in our industry. And we were meeting with Katie Gillen, who's a longtime industry executive here, about how we can fix that problem. And one thing led to another. And she's like, oh, man, you got to talk to Sandy. She is the idea lady. And she has got this idea that's unbelievable. And it's truly unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
The first and the worst.
So that's how it came about. Yeah.
And a handshake deal, which... you don't hear those too often, and we've got a good one. And I think we might even write it on a napkin just to make it official.
Or the back of one of our pictures. I
yeah,
mean, that,
or
yeah.
That.
Only if there's a ring on the napkin from condensation, maybe a little salt.
And there will be, true. There will be some beverage partaking on Wednesday night.
Yeah, after we get through everything. Yeah.
What?
We've been working on this for about a year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
What's been the hardest part in pulling it together?
I don't know.
You know, I think we thought that every writer would have their first and the worst. And we had some writers who said, I don't have any bad songs.
Which we know is
So very humble
writers. Which we thought was really funny.
All right, during the break, you got to tell us who those
are. I think one of the hardest things was, is since this was the first year, we had a lot of organizing to do.
Yeah.
We had a lot of organizing, which we won't have to do next year.
Right.
Because we got the logo done. We've got, you know. We have an award being, we're going to be giving out the
firstie,
the best, the award's actually called the Crappy.
Oh, nice. It's crappie.
Yeah.
It's pronounced crappie.
And it'll be for the best bad song.
Nice.
So, and her brother's actually designing the award.
It's a one of a kind in platinum on a pedestal. And it is a small garbage can with a cassette tape coming
going
out.
In.
Nice.
Going in, not coming out. Yeah.
Well, you know, you just mentioned a lot of people didn't acknowledge that they had a bad song, but how many people told you, I can't even remember my first song, you know, because that sometimes you don't.
Most of them said, some of them said, I do have bad ones, but I don't know where they'd go or they'd be. I'd have to go listen and, you know, go through my old cassettes or whatever. A lot of people said, I've got some bad songs. I mean, everybody kind of remembers the first songs they kind of wrote. Even Vince Gill, I was talking to Vince one evening at a party, and he said, I remember, yeah, I had the song that I know one I could do, but he wasn't available this year.
Uh-huh.
But, so.
That's what he told you, right?
It was called
he said he has got
Apache from Wenatchee.
No,
something.
It was called it was called Me and Pee Wee or Me and Apache or something. Me and Going Fishing. I forget. So
it was bad.
Well, let's talk about that because the first song's easy to pick because it's the first song you wrote, and hopefully you remember that. But what goes into choosing your worst? I mean,
a lot of times they could be the same, you know.
Yeah.
Do you have a committee? You say, hey, play us 10 songs and we'll tell you which one's the worst? Or?
No, we're trusting them that they're going to bring their worst game.
Right. Right.
Song.
Yeah, we're trusting them.
That's number one hit I had? Yeah, that's definitely the worst song.
Yeah,
I
hope not.
Well, Sandy has this song that she wrote, and the guy she actually wrote it about is going to be in the audience.
What?
Which is kind of cool.
Ex-fiancé?
No, he's not.
Okay.
He's one of the men.
Okay.
This song, Mr. Phone, which I think y'all are going to play a little bit of, and this is the demo of me. I'm about 13 years old when I recorded this, and I'm playing the guitar, so I'll apologize for that already. But I read about a guy who in ninth grade used to call me and talk to me about other girls. I had a crush on him.
That was the worst.
I know. And he used to call me and talk about other girls.
In the friend zone.
I was. And his name was Larry O'Donnell. I can say it.
Yeah.
And so fast forward several years. And that was, and I called the song Mr. Phone.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward several years. I'm watching TV and there's Oprah and Oprah. And there's Mr. Phone on Oprah. He's being interviewed on her show.
What?
And I called my mother and said, Mr. Phone is on Oprah. Long story short, Larry was the first undercover boss for CBS's, you know, the TV show?
Yeah.
Undercover boss. He was the head of waste management.
Okay.
And so he was the very first one that did that show. So that's why he was on Oprah. So when I saw that, I sent him a little letter and said, saw the show. It was great. You know, congratulations, whatever. Next morning, he got the letter. 7:30 in the morning, my phone rings, and it was Larry calling, saying, I've followed your career, and da-da-da. And I said, Larry, I said, you probably don't know this, but I wrote one of my first songs about you. So
that's hilarious.
So he was one, and can I tell you, when I told him we were doing this event, and that I would be getting up on stage and singing Mr. Phone, he was the first person to buy a table.
Really?
So Mr. and Mrs. Phone is why we'll be there that night.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what are the odds? But no.
No, he
not.
And I have actually, that kind of got our friendship going again. And we've been talking on the phone. We email and he and his wife and I. And he even came one year and we went to the CMA Awards. He loves country music. So,
well, we like people like him. Yes. Absolutely.
So now Mrs. Phone calls all the time complaining about her husband to Sandy. It's crazy.
I feel another song coming on. All right, we got to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more.
But we should probably say that this segment's brought to you by our friends at Toyota of Cool Springs.
That is true. That is true. Scott and I are both Toyota drivers. A lot of folks know that, especially if you see us driving around. And we love that dealership. I mean, it's just a great place to go and very comfortable.
Very relaxed. They don't jump on you like a bunch of vultures or anything like that. It's just very casual there. But I'll tell you, and I know we talk about this every now and then, but I love their service department. You know, I'm out of town a lot during the week, and there's been times when maybe my wife doesn't want to go to the service, you know, because they maybe talk down to her or whatever.
Right.
But she loves going in there. They treat her real good and get her in and out real quick, and she loves it.
Yeah, Toyota of Cool Springs. Go check them out on the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com. Even better, if you go there, ask for George. He's the owner. He'll take great care of you. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of Sandy Knox here on the Music Row Show.
Well, head toward the river pretty late at night. Gonna find a boy, gonna hold him tight. Gonna hug and snuggle and cuddle and coo. And the boy will be a man before I get through. We gonna be getting some. We gonna be getting some. We gonna be getting some.
Touch me. All right, wow. Welcome back to the Music Row Show.
That was 14-year-old Sandy Knox. 14-year-old
Sandy Knox.
Writing about, what was that song about?
Oh,
and how
that
come
was,
you're so
that
blushy?
Was the wrong, he wasn't supposed to play that song. He was supposed to play his phone. That was another one of my early bad songs, and that... much to my embarrassment right now. Am I red?
A little.
No.
that was called We Gonna Be Getting Some.
And you were 14 when you wrote that?
Yeah. Oh, my
so
God.
So when you
my...
said, hey, Mom, Dad, I want to demo this song, and you played it for them, what did they say?
Oh, they were. My parents were very encouraging about, you know, everything that I wrote. But I
like
asked my mother
some?
Years later, I mm-hmm. said, what did you think about that when you heard that? And she said, we knew you didn't know what you were talking about. So
right,
yeah,
then.
That's
we're safe.
But let's talk about Mom and Dad being that supportive, and how were you demoing there at the house, or how were you doing it?
Well, no, I grew up in Houston, and mm-hmm. so there were some really great studios in Houston, Texas, like Freddie Fender, the studio that Freddie cut at Sugar Hill. So I would actually go out to these really good studios, you know, and sometimes it was just me at home with a microphone and a reel to reel, but once I would have five or six songs, I'd go into the studio and maybe cut them, you know, like that.
As an 11, 12, 13, that is
probably
really...
I probably started going into the studio when I was 13, 14, 15.
And were they always...
I remember the first one, I think I was 13.
Were they always piano, guitar, vocal? Or
they were either piano, vocal or guitar vocals.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you remember how nervous you were? Like, was it one of those things where you're like... taking it very seriously, and you're nervous because you're going into the studio, and
yeah,
and you're like, oh, I don't know if my throat's gonna.
Oh yeah, I'd always be eating a lemon because that was supposed to be good for my vocal cords. I took it a little too far, probably.
Yeah.
You know? Oh yeah, we all
yeah.
did.
Yeah. Jack Daniels is actually gives you into that nice raspy quality.
Really?
So,
at 14?
Yeah, at
14.
Yeah, that's 14, what, I, yeah, that's what I tell my kids. Yeah.
Dad of the year here. Well, that's really cool that your parents did that.
They were very encouraging. Yeah.
Now let's talk about. We've heard some crazy band names in our time, and you have had a band for several years here in town.
Oh yeah, oh,
a 10-piece band that is officially my all-time new favorite name. And what was that name again?
It was
Sandy?
Sandy Knox and the Yummy Butt Cabana Boys featuring the Love Bitches.
That wow. is a band name right there. And of course, you meant female dogs. You were
right.
Right. Right.
Let me tell you, the background singers were Vicky Carrico and Etta Britt, who are stellar, still out there just singing.
Right.
And in the band, I had Mark Prentice, Bill Hullett, some of the best music, Jeff Coffin, one of the best sax players, who's now with the Dave Matthews Band.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the best musicians in this town were in that band. We had a great, great time.
So how did that, talk about the idea of forming that and just the kind of fun you guys had.
We had so much fun. You know, that we used to play at the Ace of Clubs all the time. That was kind of our home base.
Because they had cages. That
for you or the audience?
I don't remember. The cages.
They had
they?
Cages.
Oh, I was on stage.
Tatum
looking,
remembers the cages.
We might need
all right,
to talk about that.
We're done with you. Let's talk about the cages.
Tatum, tell us more.
Oh, no. We'll let Tatum talk.
But, you know, as a songwriter, I never was pursuing a singing career, really, but as a songwriter in this town, it behooves you. Yes, I use the word behoove.
Wow.
It behooves you to get up on stage and perform your songs.
Why?
Because then you're getting, hopefully if people like them, you're getting a buzz. People are talking about you. Mm-hmm. People are going to hear about it. So, mm-hmm. So I had a lot of my songs were up tempo and lend themselves to horn sections and stuff. So that's why we had a big band. So, and we did that for about 4 or 5 years. We did regular gigs and it was good. It was SRO most of the time and, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. But I tell you what, putting on gigs is hard work.
It is, right?
It's hard work. Corralling a band and sound checking.
10-piece, my goodness.
Yeah.
So with that said, you have always been a songwriter who happens to sing and perform, not the other way around. So for those songwriters who might be listening right now, what's the difference between that and, let's say, being a full-on recording artist? I mean, what...
Oh, well.
Talk about that and how you chose the path that you did and all that.
Okay. Well, it has a lot to do with I'm a homebody and I don't like to travel that much.
Right.
One, if you're an artist, you're out there on the road most of the time.
Right.
Your life is kind of broken down into 15-minute increments during the day when you're out there doing press and supporting a record. That is just not what I'm about. I like to be at home. I like mm-hmm. to hang out. You know, I like kind of a quiet life, and traveling just wasn't for me. So that's something, if you want an artist's life, you got to commit to getting behind it and supporting it, and with travel and PR and everything else. Songwriter, you can kind of choose how famous you want to be. I mean, if you want to be a famous songwriter, hire a publicist. And, you know,
right.
If you want to be a low-key songwriter, just stay at home, write songs, and turn them in. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I had a publicist for a little bit.
Okay.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned this a little earlier. You taught songwriting at the university level in Texas
mm-hmm.
for several years, seven or eight years, if I'm not mistaken.
About 8 years, yeah.
Yeah. How much can be taught with songwriting, and what elements of the craft just can't be?
Well, what you can teach is the structure of a song, where ideas, how to economize on words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we were talking earlier about your daughter had lots of words to do a song.
Right.
You know, a song has got to, you got to tell the story. You know, a songwriter gets to do everything. You know, it's like a puzzle that you get to make and put together. But you have to begin the story, tell the story, and end the story all inside of about three and a half, four minutes. It has to rhyme. It has to be set to music. There's a lot of components. So I would break it down and teach about all of those. Now, a lot of the songs that the kids did or the students turned in weren't great, but some of them were very good. And some of them went on to get cuts and do things. So.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So then you're saying that the things you can teach are just kind of the basic structure
yeah.
ideas
yeah.
and the rules, if you will.
Yeah.
Some
of the rules that we learn once we get here and we start writing professionally.
Right.
You know.
So to that end, and there's, we're just talking here. It's just us.
Hmm. You scare me when you say that.
I know. But to that, like, because you just said, you know, the stuff that we learned when we got here. So is there, let's say I have a kid that wants to go to school and get a degree in songwriting.
Hmm.
Is there a lot that you can learn there that you couldn't learn just by coming to a songwriting hub and getting chewed up for a few years?
I think you still have to come and get chewed up for a few years.
So you're going to do that and still have to go get chewed up?
Yeah. I think you got to get out there and hit the streets and learn about it, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, you can go learn, like I said, one of my rules I always said was learn all the rules and then break them.
Right.
You know, once you get to that point
mm-hmm.
where you're writing better. I remember one time I played a song that for Harlan Howard, who was a dear friend, love Harlan, and it was a song that it was a love song that I wrote in legalese, like if a lawyer wrote a love
forthwith
song.
Forthwith and as much as.
Yeah. Like. So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I played it for Harlan. I thought he was going to knock him down. I thought he was going to love it. And he turned to me and he looked at me and he said, "Sandy, stop reading books."
Uh-huh.
He said, "You got too many big words in that song."
So he didn't get the joke then?
No, he didn't.
Okay.
But I still loved him.
Yeah.
So.
Well, musical styles in general, they're constantly evolving. How have you seen the actual craft of writing evolve in the time that you've been involved in it?
You know, that's interesting because songs have changed so much through the years. I'm a real lover of the old standard style. And for a long time, I've been trying to put together a little project where I'm writing a lot of songs in that style. And that's a hard style to write. When you're trying to write in the style of Sinatra and
that, so the 30s, 40s,
yeah,
that kind of style.
Yeah, that's kind of a hard mm-hmm. style to write because nowadays there's so many other things that, you know, you got to have that repeating chorus, you have radio-friendly, ear candy. Whereas a lot of the older standards, they just made you feel something.
Mm-hmm.
They made you feel, you know, a memory or an old love or something. Nowadays, you know, I think it's changed a lot what's on the radio. So
okay. Well, how has the actual craft then evolved of writing and putting together a song? Has that, in the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years?
Well, you know, one thing is there's a lot more songwriters on one song.
Well, that's true.
I mean, I was always, I only wrote normally just me and a co-writer. I normally was a strong melody person and I could sing, but I don't play really play an instrument. Mm-hmm. So there was always normally only two co-writers. And now there's sometimes three and four. And so I think there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So, and that's, so, and I'll have to say I'm not a big fan of, I think it dilutes maybe sometimes the power of the song when you got too many people on it.
At what point did you stop writing your by yourself and actually start writing with other people?
Well, right before I moved to Nashville, I had gone out to Los Angeles and I had been accepted into their ASCAP's West Coast workshop.
Okay.
And I was 20 and I went out there and that's when I started realizing that co-writing could be very beneficial, especially since I didn't really play an instrument. My song got better when I wrote it with somebody who really knew what they were doing on an instrument. So that kind of started it. And then when I moved here to Nashville in 1983, then I really started seeing the benefit of co-writing.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
you said something a minute ago about Harlan saying stop reading books.
Yeah.
But I also saw somewhere where you said reading is very important to a writer.
I think it is.
So let's talk about that. Why is that important?
Well, I think if you're going to write, you need to read. I will tell you, okay, like on one of my hits that I wrote that Reba did, Why Haven't I Heard From You?
Right.
That song is all about the telephone and the history of the telephone. That song came about because I'm an avid reader, and one of the things that I loved to read was National Geographic. In September of 1988, they did a whole issue on Alexander Graham Bell, which is where I got the idea for that song. Hmm. I started thinking about how the invention of the telephone changed courting, changed romance. Before that, a man would just leave his calling card saying, you know, I would like to call on you on Friday. That was the beginning of a date possible. And then with the telephone, they could call you up. And then fast forward, they'd call you up from their car. You know, they could just downstairs. So that's where I got the idea for Why Haven't I Heard From You? It was because of reading.
Well, fast forward now. What is that? Tinder? Yeah, now.
I'm not on that. Right.
So, but that begs the question, though. Would there have been a Why
Haven't... anyway. I don't believe her.
Yeah, you're going to look. Would there have been a Why Haven't I Heard From You if there hadn't been first a Mr. Phone?
Probably.
Would you have even had that idea?
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
I'm thinking there's another... You got to give that guy a co-write.
Oh, no, can I tell you, I have had an ex-boyfriend say that... Call me and ask me if I wrote something about him.
Right.
And did he get half the royalties since he inspired it? Oh, yeah.
For real?
Well, that put Taylor Swift out of business if it worked that
way. It kind of would, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yes, that's interesting. I had a guy, yeah.
By the way, that was Tatum that said that, which reminds us. Let's hear more about these cages, Tatum. Yeah. I really want to get back to this. No, let's talk. We haven't mentioned this segment. This show, again, is The First and the Worst. It's going to be at 3rd and Lindsley. Doors open at 5 o'clock.
On April 1st.
On April 1st, which is, was that Wednesday or Tuesday?
Wednesday.
Wednesday,
yeah.
And we got just another couple minutes, so talk about how Music Health Alliance helps the musicians and the songwriters here in this community.
Well, in Nashville and actually around the nation, the music industry is a series of self-employed folks and small businesses, and they don't have access to big HR departments like you would if you worked for GE or Dell. Mm-hmm. And what I experienced firsthand when I was pregnant and then having twins as an artist manager 12 years ago was I had some issues, some health issues, and I didn't have anyone to ask questions of or how to understand or read my insurance policy. And fast forward 8 years, I realized, holy smokes, no one else in our industry does either. And there are people dying alone and suffering alone, or we're having benefits and passing the bucket when someone gets sick instead of preventing illness and staying well and planning. So about 3 years ago, with a supportive husband who said, you know what, you got to do this. This is the right thing to do. I launched Music Health Alliance as a full nonprofit where you, if you've worked in the music industry for 2 or more years making a living, you can walk through our doors. Our services are free. and we will help you with all things healthcare. Our mission is to heal the music through services that protect, direct, and connect to keep you well and prevent disease and illness. And by protect, it's we help you find health insurance, whether it's through the marketplaces and the Affordable Care Act or private market, depending on where you fall in the income totem pole. And we direct helping you find resources and doctors. And if you have a diagnosis and don't know what to do and feel alone, you're never alone. And there's always a solution. And then we connect you with those resources. So since January of 2013, we've helped secure over $5.5 million in life-saving financial resources for people in our industry, whether it's someone needed a liver transplant or a pacemaker or help paying for chemo treatments or medication. We had a client who was a Grammy winner who was reusing disposable diapers and living on rice because he didn't think he could afford his Parkinson's medication, and it was actually covered because he was a veteran and he had no idea. So a lot of times it's just looking at the facts and helping find, you know, connect the dots and finding a solution. And that's what we do. And we're all from the industry. Mm-hmm. So we understand the revenue streams. We know what you're going through. There's really not a job that someone in our office hasn't done from the top to the bottom. And it's an extraordinary place. So come visit us.
Absolutely. And your website?
It's www.musichealthalliance.com. Or you can call us at 615-200-6896. 200-6896. Call us.
Let's take a quick break. We're going to be back with more of Sandy Knox and Cage Talk with Tatum here on the Music Row Show. Stick around.
Back to the Music Row Show. That is Mr. Phone that we've been talking about all night long. The very first song recorded by our guest this hour, Sandy Knox.
We've also got roller skate in a buffalo cage. Yeah, roller skate in a buffalo cage.
Oh my God! I told you I was a big Roger Miller fan.
Yeah. Oh boy, were you ever?
Oh my God. That's funny. Get sued.
At this point, no.
I think you're okay.
Tatum is also here with us, the president of Music Health Alliance.
And founder.
And founder. You found it.
I found it.
Here it is.
I found it. I've been looking all my life.
All over the place.
Wasn't in a cage.
You got an ace of clubs.
This is a short segment here, but I'm kind of a Neil Diamond nut. Mm-hmm. So you've written with him, you've had cuts, and apparently been thrown into a pool by him.
Oh, yes.
Can you give us your best suitable for radio Neil Diamond story?
Well, throwing me into the pool.
Why would he throw you into the pool?
He was throwing everybody in that day. He was having a party at his house. You know, he did an album here in town called Tennessee Moon, and he wrote most of the album was co-written by people here in town. I got a call to go over and write with him, and I knew he was going through a bad divorce at the time. So I sent a couple of songs that I thought would really break his heart. And one of them, and it was called Like You Do. And we did try to do some writing together, but that didn't work. We didn't write anything, but he loved the song so much that he cut it on the record. And it was the only song on the record that he didn't write or didn't have anything to do with. So anyways, he had a pool party and invited everybody, and he was just throwing everybody in the pool. And I kept avoiding him and avoiding him, and I was the last person, and I got thrown.
You got thrown in the pool.
Yeah.
By Neil Diamond.
By Neil Diamond.
That's just cool.
And he had a photographer there, so I have pictures. I have pictures, framed pictures on my wall of, you know, of me sopping wet in a pool with Neil Diamond. And he's in a green bathing suit. And I'm in a red cashmere sweater that's a little clingy.
Interesting. Oh, the life you've had, Sandy.
Wow.
Thank you.
You know how to party.
All right, let's take another break. We're going to be back with a few more minutes with Sandy Knox. We have a big event coming up here this Wednesday, The First and the Worst at 3rd and Lindsley. Doors open at 5. How much are tickets if they get there?
Good question.
We have $20 seats. We have $75 seats. People have bought tables. But I think general admission, I think it's $20.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll take what you can get.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Okay. Let's be right back here on the Music Row Show. Stick around.
And now back to the Music Row Show.
Oh, he's an eighth grader.
An old boy named Bell invented a contraption that we know so.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with hit songwriter Sandy Knox, and of course that's one of her big hits for Reba, Why Haven't I Heard From You. We've been talking about that and Mr. Phone and how that all kind of tied in with this song and Alexander Graham Bell and all.
Mm-hmm. So hold on.
Okay, we're done holding on. So you've been quoted as saying that you want listeners who listen to your music to laugh, cry, or make love.
Right.
And, you know, Scott and I got the crying part down. People cry when we play songs. But what exactly did you mean by that? Can you expand
on
that?
Well, I think that a really good song causes a feeling.
Right.
And I've always said it should make you want to laugh, make you want to cry, or make you want to make love. It should
get
make
some.
You, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Right.
So, yeah. There's a running theme going on here.
It should make one of those things happen, you know.
Interesting.
That's what I think.
Okay.
Well, we're talking to Sandy because she's going to be one of the great writers that are going to take part in First and the Worst. This is when several hit songwriters are going to be up there sharing the first song they wrote, the worst song they wrote. And give us the lineup again.
Roxy Dean, Rivers Rutherford, Richard Lee, Liz Rose, Wynn Varble, and Phil Barton.
Nice.
All hit songwriters, all have number one records.
Yeah.
A few Grammys. You know, Richard Lee wrote that wonderful Don't
yes.
Make My Brown
yes,
Eyes
yes.
Blue.
Mm-hmm.
We love Richard Lee. Have you ever had Richard on the
oh,
show?
Yes, we have. Yeah. Liz is the only one on that list we haven't had.
And
on
she
the
wrote
show.
A lot of, co-wrote a lot of those Taylor Swift
those
songs.
Taylor Swift right. songs. Right. She's done all right.
Yeah.
I think
she's
so.
Maybe I'll tell her when I see her that you want her
tell
on
her
show.
We've been hunting her.
Absolutely.
That's a way to get
that's
to
right.
a woman.
Yeah. Hey, we've been hunting you. We heard you came back into town now.
He's a sweet talker.
That's right.
He's a sweet talker.
Let's talk music business for a minute. Because, actually, I don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about this. Since we just heard that song, Why Haven't I Heard From You, which mm-hmm. I love, I want to live vicariously through you for a minute, okay?
All right.
What goes through, as a songwriter, your mind, your heart, the first time you hear Reba and Linda singing Does He Love You, mm-hmm. or the first time you hear Why Haven't I Heard From You, were you in the studio? Were you in the car? Did they come in and let you listen, or... Just let us be a fly on the
no,
wall.
No, I didn't go to. And I was not one of the. I was not one of these writers who would go to the studio and hang out, you know, and go do things like that. The first time I heard Reba do one of my songs, okay, that same day, I had gotten a Dionne Warwick cut,
mm-hmm.
a song called "Where My Lips Have Been."
Right.
That
that's a great title.
Thank
too.
You. and so that was cut on this album that she did with Burt Bacharach and Hal David. And it, and again, it was the only song on the record that wasn't written by those two, by Hal David and Burt Bacharach. Anyways, so the day that I get that in the mail, I get that CD. I also got the CD with my very first Reba cut, which was a song called "He Wants to Get Married,"
right?
Which was on her, I think it was a "Read My Mind" album.
Mm-hmm.
Or Last Call. I forget which album it was on. So those both arrived within the same hour at my house.
Nice.
So I sat there on the floor of my little apartment, and I played one, and then I played the other, then I played the other, and then I played that all for like 3 hours. I would just listen to Dionne Warwick sing one of my songs. Wow. Then I listened to Reba, because those were my first big cuts.
That's, you know, amazing.
That, and then, awesome. Yeah, and that He Wants to Get Married was Reba. That's how she discovered me as a songwriter. And mm-hmm. so after that, she was willing to, you know, listen to my tunes. And the next one she cut was Why Haven't I Heard From You? And then she thinks his name was John. Yeah. So
did you just, I think my head would explode if I heard Why Haven't I Heard From You the first, because that, I mean, she just,
yeah,
that song is just an explosion.
Yeah.
And
yeah. How yeah. close was that to the demo?
Pretty close.
Pretty yeah. close? Yeah. Awesome.
I can bring you the demo sometime.
Yeah, it's a little late now.
It was, you know, it was pretty close. Bill Hollett produced, a fabulous guitar player here in town. I don't know if you know Bill, but Bill produced most of my demos at Blue Water. So
sweet. Well, thank you so much for coming in and joining us. And everybody go out there and check out First and Worst. Where can people find out about that?
firstandworst.com
or www.musichelpalliance.com.
And there we also have a Facebook page, First and the Worst Facebook page.
All kinds of great yeah. places to find out. And when you're done doing all that, go check out themusicroshow.com, find out who we got on next. And until we meet again.
Well, Bruce Coburn's next
Bruce
right now.
Bruce Coburn is going to be on in just a few minutes, so stick around for that.